On this episode, you will learn how S-Corps actually save taxes. We'll dive into what specific tax S-Corps reduce, what mistake business owners make setting up their S-Corp or having someone do it for you, and lastly, what's the approximate cost to have an S-Corporation set up and to run it on an annualized basis? As always, if this episode helps you or brings you value in any way, please do me a favor, share it with a friend. Thank you and enjoy the show. Welcome to Build Your Wealth Muscle, a podcast dedicated to helping fitness entrepreneurs build wealth by saving taxes and growing their money. Each episode will break down different strategies in the areas of business, tax, and retirement planning specifically for your coaching business. Disclaimer, the topics covered in this podcast are for educational purposes only. This is not advice for your specific situation. Please consult a qualified financial or tax professional before making any changes to your financial or tax situation. Now here's your host, certified financial planner and tax advisor, Pat Darby. How's it going, everybody? Happy New Year. Well, I guess it's the second episode of the new year, but if you're unfamiliar, the podcast format is really twofold. Solo episodes like this one, where we can go pretty deep on specific topics of finance, tax, cash flow planning. And then we're also bring on guests that might have a similar business, but they have a different skill set than myself. So they'll be able to give you tips. One of the things we're also doing differently this year in 2024, for the last 2 years, obviously this episode, maybe not obviously, but this is episode 103. And one of the things I've been hesitant about doing, I was like, well, I always want to come up with something new and helpful for you guys. But I realized that some of the episode topics are pretty old, relatively. So I want to start going back for old topics and refresh them. Like, for example, today we're going to talk about how S-Corps save you taxes. But the last time I talked about this in depth was February of 2022. So I assume most people are like me, they're not really going back and scrolling through their old episodes of a podcast, like at least not a couple of years. They might feel that data is outdated, so it's probably not as helpful. So that's one of the things we're going to do this year is remake some of the episodes that hopefully that's helpful. So we're talking S corporations and why you should consider it, because one of the things that you'll learn when you go to the S corp is there's a lot of rules, I don't want to call them loopholes, but there's more procedures than when you're not an S corp. So it can feel overwhelming, at least in the beginning. Again, it's all repetitive stuff. So the longer you're an S corp, the more you're comfortable with what you need to do on a monthly, quarterly, annualized basis. But in the beginning, it can feel like a lot. And this is why I also have a bit of a gripe with the accounting industry in general, is that it is very easy to set up an S-Corp in terms of letting the IRS know. Say, hey, business owner, here's the form I filled out for you. It's in 90 days or so, the IRS will likely give you your confirmation letter, and now you're an S-Corp. So they might not charge you much. They might charge a couple $100 to fill out that form for you. But the problem I have with that is they are not teaching you all the rules the IRS expects for your S-Corp to be in compliance. And so that you're not intentionally having audit risk, things like that. So what is an S-Corp and how does it really work? So the first thing we have to understand is LLCs are not tax strategies. They're legal strategies. So if your business is doing well, and or you've heard someone say like, oh, you're in business now, get an LLC. That's not tax related, because like I've talked about many times on this show, that doesn't save you any taxes. A person with no LLC or a person with an LLC has virtually all the same tax deductions available. Really, the only one that you don't, for the most part, is the one I'm talking about today. Because if you have no entity at all, you can't do the S-Corp strategy. And so what S-Corps do in essence is there's essentially three types of taxes that business owners get really punched in the face with. The first two are very commonly understood. It's the federal taxes and state taxes. Now, if you're in a state like Nevada, like I'm in here in Vegas, or if you're in Florida, Texas, there's nine total states that have no state tax. So if you're in those states, then cool. If you're in California, New York, New Jersey, you're well aware of your state tax because those are some of the higher ones. But federal and state taxes are pretty well known. The third tax sneaks up on people. It's called self-employment taxes. And what that really makes up with is Social Security and Medicare. That's how they pay for it, is through that third type of tax. Now, when you work for somebody else, those taxes are being paid for half from you. You see that getting pulled from your paycheck along with your federal and state. And the other half is being paid by your employer. So you don't really pay attention to it. But when you're working for yourself, that entire amount, which comes to 15.3%, not all the way up forever, but just for simplicity purposes, it's 15.3%. And that's what sneaks up on people. And so that tax alone, that self-employment tax, not federal, not state, that self-employment taxes, that's what S-corps are doing. They're reducing that or blocking it, if that's an easier way to look at it. And the way that they do so is because they will put, when you're in an S-corp, you have to pay yourself salary. And again, I'm going to go through the details of this, but you have to pay yourself a salary. When you're a regular sole proprietorship or a regular LLC, you don't have to. It doesn't matter. You can just leave all the money in the business if you like, or do bank transfers from your business to your personal. It doesn't matter. Tax-wise, it doesn't change anything, because a dollar of profit, the IRS has taxed you on it because it's called a pass-through entity. Sole proprietorships and LLCs, S-corps, are all pass-through entities. But in the S-corp world, that payroll that you need to pay yourself is where that self-employment tax lives. So the amount of profit you make above what you pay yourself through payroll is not subject to that self-employment taxes. And so that's the game. You want to pay yourself as little as you can, and the IRS calls it reasonable compensation, and it's extremely vague, but it's that differential between what you are paying through payroll and the rest of your total take-home profit where you're saving self-employment taxes. Now, just to reiterate, like I've said, but in case there's any confusion, your federal tax liability, your state tax liability are unaffected by S-corps. They don't save you those two taxes. They're exclusively saving you self-employment taxes. So the other perk, other than this tax savings, is that S-corporations are audited significantly less than sole proprietorships and LLCs. Now, I've had in the past, like clients/prospects that didn't want to move to it. And it can be a mistake because two things. As you grow an LLC that's making over $500,000 a year in profit, that falls on Schedule C. And the reason it's audited more is because Schedule C sits right on your personal tax return. Now, that just makes it easier for someone to see something in there. So if you're being a little aggressive with your tax deductions, making a lot of money and having it on a Schedule C, which is basically an LLC that's just a regular LLC, or a sole proprietorship that has no entity at all, making more than 500 grand in profit, you're in one of the highest audit rates. Conversely, you take that same profit, you drop it into an S-corp situation, and your audit rate drops dramatically. Forget the numbers. I think it's like 1,500% lower audit rate, something like that. They're audited like 15 times less. And again, that number gets more critical the more money you make. So I'm not looking to scare anybody. Like if you're an LLC, you're only making a couple $100,000, you're not in those top audit rates. But if you are multi six-figure, low seven-figure earner and you haven't switched to the S-corp, and maybe you haven't done so because you've heard podcasts similar to this and you're like, oh man, it's a pain in the ass to do this. I get it. But not just are you saving taxes, but you are lowering your audit risk. So that's usually compelling for a lot of people. So now that we talked about that, I do want to break down what you actually need to do. And again, I'm not saying you need to do this, but someone should be helping you with it. So if you've built an S-corp before, and especially if you use one of the big websites where you go in, you just say, hey, this is what I want. They bill you, you know, a couple $100, maybe less. They file the IRS paperwork and now you're an S-corp. Just be aware of how much is on your shoulders to do. Again, I'm not saying go hire someone hopefully this is helpful enough for you that you can DIY it. But I do encourage you to talk to a tax professional, reach out to myself if you like, and make sure that all of these pieces are set up for you, because it will increase your audit risk, because now you have an S-Corp and you'll be out of compliance with the way that the rules work. And there's a few that are annoying, but again, it's the cost of saving money. Okay, so the first thing you're going to do is you're going to file this IRS form 2553. All that is, it just tells the IRS, I want to be taxed like an S corporation. And so if you're a regular LLC, you still are a regular LLC, but in the eyes of the IRS, you're now an S corporation. So again, that form is where a lot of people stop. A lot of accountants as well that don't do the tax advisory work, that are not doing the strategy with you, that's potentially where they stop. And I'm not throwing mud at them. Like, they're doing what you ask. Like, hey, make me an S-Corp. Boom, you're an S-Corp. Goodbye. But the next piece of the puzzle is you need to have payroll set up. Now, I should take a step back. If you don't already have a business bank account, you're going to need one even if you're a regular LLC. But you absolutely have to have one now, because everything needs to fall inside of a bank account that's owned by the entity. So if you have that LLC, now let me take a step back and just say something, because this is a segue. The term S-Corp can be a little confusing, because some people are an S-Corp, which is like essentially an entity, versus some people are an LLC that's taxed as an S-Corp. And the way that works is, when you're sole proprietorship, you really have a choice. You can sit, when you sit down with your lawyer, again, that formation should be done by a lawyer. When you sit down with them, they're going to say, do you want to be an LLC and tax as an S-Corp, or do you want to just go straight to the S-Corp? And the reason for that is confusing to people, because for all intents and purposes, the S-Corp is not really an S-Corp. It's really a C-corporation that's taxed as an S-Corp, or an LLC taxed as an S-Corp. So that part gets confusing. The reason I highly encourage people, again, I'm not a lawyer, but the reason I highly encourage you to go the LLC route instead of the direct to the S-Corp is there's more flexibility there. So if something changes and you need to revoke that S-election, now there are instances, and maybe I'll just go over them now for you, but the reason you may decide you need to revoke it are twofold. One, maybe you bring on a partner, and S-corporations, and I have a whole episode on this. It is episode 72, why you want to have partnerships that are not taxed as S-corps. So if you're bringing on a partner, it might make sense for you to revoke the S-election so it can be a regular partnership, not taxed as an S-corp. And then you, in that scenario, you would just move the S-election down to another entity as a parent company. That's outside of the scope of this podcast. DM me if you have questions, or listen to episode 72 and it goes into depth of that. But that's one reason you might want to revoke the S-election. Another reason might just be maybe the nature of the business changed, profitability changed. There could be other reasons why you want to revoke that S-election. It's a lot cleaner when you've done so out of an LLC, because then you just file a form with the IRS saying, hey, put me back to regular LLC. Boom, done. The other reason that I encourage is because when you have an LLC, at the state level, you're an LLC. And I've seen situations, and now don't quote me on this because maybe things have changed. And again, I'm not a lawyer. This was relayed to me by the lawyers who had this problem. When you move states, which a lot of people are doing right now, especially if you're in the New York, California, New Jersey, if you're moving states and you're heading to Nevada, Florida, Texas, Tennessee, all these places with more favorable business laws, more favorable taxes, et cetera, you do what's called a domestication, where you just take your LLC as it is, same tax ID number, everything stays the same, and you just move it from one state to another. That's exactly what I did. I used to live in New Jersey, for people who have been listening to this podcast for a while. I moved to Vegas here in Nevada, and I did a domestication. So nothing changed. My bank accounts are the same, my tax IDs, the filing, everything. The only thing that changed was the home address. And a lawyer did what's called a domestication. He moved it, no problem. There's some states that don't let you do that in general. So again, it's not 100%. But it's even more common that they don't let you move. For example, I don't think you cannot move an S corporation from California to Nevada. So that's a perfect example there where, if I'm not mistaken, LLCs can move from California to Nevada. So being an S corp, not an LLC, taxed as an S corp, can have less flexibility. But that being said, if you're sitting here listening and you are an LLC, or sorry, you are an S corp directly, like, and usually you know because you look at your documents and one would say ABC Co. LLC versus the other one might say, well, maybe I shouldn't say Co. It would say ABC LLC versus the other one might say ABC Inc. And so that incorporation versus limited liability company makes that difference. But don't stress it if you've already done it. It's not the end of the world. That's what I prefer if someone's starting from scratch. Okay. So what we left off on was the procedures. And where I was going with that is you do need to have a bank account in the name of the business. Again, you probably should do this anyway. Not probably. You should do this anyway because you don't want to commingle things. You want all your business revenue and your business expenses paid out of a bank account that's in the name of the entity. That's highly recommended as an LLC, but it's required as an S corp because everything has to live on that. Sorry, I hit the microphone. Has to live on that tax or on that business tax return inside of the business. So it's required. The next thing you need to do is you need to set up payroll. Now, this is the part that is, I don't want to say the hardest part, but this is the part where people can get exhausted. I use Gusto. I highly recommend them. I've had issues with some of the other big players when my clients rolled in from there. But I'm very biased towards Gusto. That's what all my clients are on. And I do think they make this a very simple process. So getting up federally with your payroll is really simple, especially through Gusto. You type in all the information, you put in your bank account. Again, that's why you also need a business bank account because it has to, like where they're going to pull their funds from and all that. That's easy. The federal stuff is easy. Where it can get tricky, and it's state by state, is the next thing you need to do is register with your state. And typically, you're going to be registering in two areas. It's going to be like with the Department of Tax or Department of Tax Revenue, think something like that. And then it's also their Department of Unemployment. So even if you're in a state like Nevada, where you're like, well, I don't pay state tax, you still have to register with the Department of Tax because there are often a tax that gets charged that's through payroll. So here in Nevada, you pay a modified business tax, and that is how Gusto or whoever your payroll provider is going to file the paperwork for you and pay the state what's owed. And again, you're going to do the same thing with the unemployment side. Registering with the state can arguably, again, that can feel like the hardest part because every state's different. Some are hard to get a hold of when things don't work. And a company like Gusto, what I like about it is they're very diligent at checking that you've done it properly. Because if it doesn't sync in with their program, they let you know. And so then you can fix it. So it doesn't go too many quarters of the states being like, hey, we need this paperwork from you. We need this tax payment from you, things like that. So getting the payroll is critical, registering with the state. And again, this is the stuff that if you're DIYing it, you might not even have payroll. And then if you're trying to DIY the payroll, you might not even realize some of the states and cities that you owe tax reporting to. So that's some of the reasons why, again, I'm like, it's helpful to have someone usher you through this process. Now, that being said, setting up the payroll, for some people, you might feel like that's a big pain in the ass. But once it's done, and then it's really easy because, again, like Gusto, they're taking care of everything for you. So someone walking you through it, if you pay them like to help you, then that's set up. Now, some states are going to require the owner of the business now. Okay, so I didn't say this clearly. One of the things in an S corp is you're now an employee of your own business. Again, that might be confusing for people. But you have to differentiate that. So part of the S corp, you're saving self-employment tax on your salary, but you are now an employee of your own business. So they're likely, meaning your payroll provider, is going to say, well, you have an employee here. you have to set up workers' comp for them, workers' compensation. In the vast majority of states, you don't have to have workers' compensation on yourself, but you do want to double check with a workers' comp company and double check because some states do require it on yourself, and but most don't. But so just another thing on the checklist that if you're setting up payroll for yourself, you may need workers' comp for yourself. Most likely you won't though, but it's just one more thing. And this is again, why I go back to promoting Gusto. They're on it with this stuff and they have some internal connections where you can work with a workers' comp company and call them up and say, hey, I'm in this state. Do I need it on myself? Yes or no? And if most of them are like, no, you don't, you're good. And just check the box, the task goes away, and then go back to running your business. All right. The next thing you need to do, and this gets the most pushback, and now let me explain why. When you're in an S corp, you are the employee of your own business. And now, so the question is, how do I reimburse myself as the business owner, even though I'm an employee? Because under the Trump tax code, employees lost their ability to do reimbursements. And so what you have to do in an S corporation is reimburse yourself as the owner for the things that are mixed use. So what those are, it could be your vehicle. It's most likely your home office. It could be your cell phone. And it also could be if you accidentally used your personal credit card for maybe booked a flight that was actually a business trip and you need to get paid back by the business. How do you do that? The IRS lets you do it through what's called an accountable plan. And this can feel like the most annoying part because every single month, and you're supposed to do it, you should get in the habit of doing it monthly just because there are timelines on this. I believe the timeline is 60 days. The IRS expects these to be done. But just getting it done monthly, it just, in my opinion, systematizes it or routinizes. I don't know if that's a word. But it makes it part of your monthly routine when you're doing payroll for yourself. Like you might do payroll for your team twice a month, but you're likely maybe doing it for yourself just once a month. And in Gusto, you can set up different payroll schedules. So that's doable. But that being said, the ability to reimburse yourself has to be through this procedure called the accountable plan. So you have to set this up, and the procedures to do so can feel trivial because you're essentially setting up the plan yourself, signing a document saying that the plan exists and filing it. And that really doesn't go anywhere unless you're audited and the IRS has proved that you have an accountable plan and you can show, hey, look, like myself, the CEO, signed this document, putting this plan into place. And then on a monthly basis, you reimburse yourself for last month's expenses. So what you paid for your home office, like everything else personal, if your cell phone's paid personally, and then you send yourself money as a reimbursement. Now, if you're in Gusto, I highly recommend you using their reimbursement feature because you can connect all that to your QuickBooks and then your reimbursement is just auto-categorized. So it's one less thing for your team to do because the problem is if you have a bookkeeping team and let's say your reimbursement each month is, you know, $900 to $1,200 a month or $2,000 to $2,500, who cares? The reimbursement team is just, or sorry, your bookkeeping team, when they go into your books, all they're going to see is a bank transfer from your business checking to your personal checking. And that will, to them, not be differentiated between when you send the money to yourself as an owner's draw. Potentially, you're sending money out into a tax savings account. All they see are funds going from a business account to a personal account. And so, again, you might have systems in place, but you're adding a potential that gets categorized as an owner's draw versus what it really is, which is a business expense that you get a tax-free distribution for. So again, that's just a recommendation. Do it any way you like. If you got a system even better than that, set up right between yourself and your bookkeeping team, cool. But that's one thing I recommend because it just takes some of the risk of error off the plate. Off the plate. That's fine. Okay. So to date, you've filled out the form. You have the payroll in place. You have your reimbursement system in place. The next thing you want to do is make sure all of your vendors, all your payment processors, they're all in the name of the LLC, which is being taxed as an S corp. Because again, if you have income hitting your social, that 1099 is not going to be part of the business tax reporting. And that causes a mismatch in the IRS computer system because people are issuing you a 1099 to your social and you might be claiming that income inside of the business. So you're doing what you need to do in terms of like, hey, I'm an honest taxpayer. I'm claiming all my income. But on the IRS system, it doesn't compute because they're like, hey, you never claimed this 1099 personally, even though you claimed it in your business. So inside of an audit, now you got to explain that. But or you can just make sure that all of your 1099s from your payment processors, from your social media that are paying you, all of them, that they have the tax ID number of the business. And the other cool thing is once you fill out a W-9 and let them know you're an S corp, they don't owe you a 1099 anyway. No one has a 1099, a C or an S corp, unless they're a law firm, then they still need to. Not sure why. Maybe the IRS doesn't trust lawyers. I don't know. One thing I should have mentioned before, but I'll say it now since we're sort of getting to the end here. Once you do the part where you fill out the S corporation form, again, I don't know if most of you listening are going to fill this out yourself, the form 2553. There's at least 90 days before you're going to hear from the IRS. And sometimes I've had clients like they just, for whatever reason, never received it. We call them up and we're like, hey, are we an S corp? And they're like, yeah, you've been an S corp for months. I'm like, okay, please resend that confirmation letter because we didn't get it. But here's what I recommend. Once you fill out that paperwork, start acting like an S corp. Because once you've proven that you have the paperwork sent to them, again, you might have to like make sure you keep your fax confirmation, all that stuff. You can keep resubmitting until they confirm you. But what you don't want to have done is you get to the end of the year and they finally get you your confirmation letter, but now you haven't been running payroll. So you have this brand new S corp, the IRS, like, oh, sorry, here you go. We confirm you to January 1. And you're like, crap, I don't have any payroll. And so you're immediately out of compliance with your new S corp. So once you fill out that paperwork, you start acting like an S corp. Now, another thing that I should have brought up in the beginning, but it's applicable now because we're talking about the timing of things. You can go back to once that LLC is formed. So if you're listening to this and you're like, I formed my LLC a couple of years ago, I should be an S corp for 2024. But well, one, we have 75 days when you do a regular filing. So until March 15th, you just do a regular election and say, hey, I want to go back to January 1. But if you're listening to this later in the year, past March 15th, you can file retroactive elections. So you could be in November, December, and go all the way back to January 1 if you've had the entity. Now, we'll say, because thankfully we're recording this in January, doing so, you're probably going to get charged more by the accountant helping you with that because there's a lot to do in a short period of time. Because now you have to run around and set up all the S corp. Set up the S corp, set up the payroll, set up the state registration. And some of the states, they like mail you the number you're going to need. So you set it all up and then you got to wait like 5, 10 business days, whatever the case may be. And then you have to run an annualized payroll. I'm just going to say you might get charged more because they're spending a lot of time trying to expedite things towards the end of the year for you. So, but it can be done and it can be a huge tax saver. But I just want to, since I'm purposely talking about this in January when everything's smooth, I would encourage you not to do that. The last thing you need to be aware of, S-Corps have their own business tax return. So that's why in general, when to be an S-Corp, oh damn, I should have said this in the beginning. So when should you be an S-Corp? You should be an S-Corp when you are making between 40 and 60K of profit, not revenue, profit. So if you're making 100, 150, 200 grand and you're like, yeah, I should be an S-Corp, please build a P&L for yourself and grab all your expenses. Because I've seen a few times where people have very high revenue and then, but they're investing in themselves and their business. And so when we whittle it all down, their profit gets significantly lower than where their revenue was. And then the S-Corp is just saving them a little bit of money or nothing at all sometimes. Because being an S-Corp comes with administrative costs. Now, we just went through it. So that's this part's applicable. We just went through the fact that you're going to have payroll. You're going to potentially be paying someone to usher you through this setup process. And then the last piece of the puzzle is S-Corps have their very own business tax return. And that's due a month before personal tax return. So they're due in March. Now, you can extend them just like you can personal, and it moves to September instead of, but it's 6 months. So your personal can be extended from April to October. Your business one can be extended from March to September. But much like the other one, you have to file the paperwork to hit that extension button. And so most accounts are going to charge you $1,000 to $2,000 to do these. But again, between payroll and setup costs, you can see that it's running you $2,000 to $3,000 to get this thing up and running. And to maintain it, probably going to be around that each year. So that's why you have those income thresholds, because then you're starting to save yourself $4,000 or $5,000 in taxes. So you're netting a tax savings. If you jump in it too soon, then you're potentially giving your tax savings just to an accounting firm and a payroll provider. The other mistake that I've seen people make is that they file for an S-Corp and then they do nothing. S-Corp, I believe it's now up to $220 a month or so. So being late on your S-Corp is going to cost you like $200 or so. I think it's $220 a month right now per shareholder. So you don't want to do that. If you can avoid it, you want to make sure you have your S-Corp filed on time or extended on time. So that's basically it. On a monthly basis, so we've gone through the annoying side of the setup process. Again, I don't want you scared. I want you to be S-Corps. I just want you to understand that it's a little bit of work. And then each month you're going to do the same thing, and it's just going to get very systematized. But on a monthly basis, you're really kind of doing three things. Again, I've had clients like feel like it's a little overwhelming. But again, it's just in the beginning. The second month or so, they're like, oh man, this is a lot of work. Yeah, but it starts to become very simple. Because what are you doing each month? Because again, the main things that you have to maintain is that reimbursement system. Everything else is on autopilot. Your payroll for yourself. Obviously, you're going to have it. Well, not obviously, but most people are going to have an accountant filing the tax return. And so most likely, if you're an S-Corp, you're already in like a QuickBooks software or something like that. So on a monthly basis, you're really only doing two things is worrying about that reimbursement system. So you're updating your mileage log so that the reimbursement system knows what percentage of your vehicle is a write-off. And then the next thing you're doing is adding in the percentage of like your home office and your cell phone and whatever else, like a mixed use item that you've moved into the business. And that's it. You're adding those reimbursements, percentages and dollar amounts to your payroll, and you're doing monthly payroll. And if you're on a company like Augusto, they're taking care of everything on the back end. And then that payroll report and that W-2, you give that to your accountant, and that's part of it. He's going to take that, and or he or she is going to take that as well as your profit and loss statement, and he's going to know exactly how to file your taxes. So hopefully that's helpful. Again, the deadlines to be aware of, March 15th each year is when the S-Corp tax return is due. So as I'm recording this, it's the end of January. So if you're working with somebody, make sure they are extending you if you're not doing it yourself. And the other one is just getting that March 15th is also the deadline to put the form in to let them know you want to be an S-Corp. But again, don't stress that one because you can always go back and do a retroactive election. So hopefully this is helpful. If you need help with this, because it's a lot, and my firm, we walk you through this every step of the way, setting up the accountable plan, setting up the payroll, setting up the state. I think we make it easier, but there are a lot of moving pieces. And I think that's important for people to understand for two reasons. One, so your expectations are reasonable. And two, no matter who you work with, if you get sticker shock, that likely means they're walking you through the whole process. And conversely, if you talk to someone like, oh, I'll set up your S-Corp, I'll charge you $200. Just ask them if they're helping you set up the payroll, the accountable plan, all those other things, because that's where oftentimes clients come to me and they're completely disorganized in those areas. No one even told them they had to do those sorts of things. And so you have this new S corp, but you've paid yourself no salary, and you're immediately setting yourself up for sending red flags into the IRS S corp system, because that's the main thing that it looks at. They see how much profit you made, and then the computer system scrolls down to what the owner's compensation was. And very often, if it shows X profit and zero payroll, you're not going to get audited, but that's a red flag to the computer system. The other way, just as a more advanced topic when it comes to this, the other thing that the IRS computer system looks at is not necessarily the profit. That's like the simplified way to explain it to people. It's also looking at what your distributions are. So if you're in a situation where, let's say, either your spouse works or you work, and so you have money that you are funding your lifestyle with while you get your business going, or maybe you have a real estate portfolio or whatever. But if you're in a situation where you're literally taking nothing out of the business, so in, let's say a hypothetical example, you have $500,000 of revenue, $300,000 worth of expenses, and so you have $200,000 worth of profit. And you know next year you're going to be staffing up, you're going to be hiring mentors and coaches and going to business events. So you just leave that 200 grand in the business because your lifestyle, your personal expenses are all paid for. The computer system will see that your distributions were zero, which allows you now to make your salary also zero. But if it sits there and it reads 200 grand of profit, you know, $199,000 worth of distributions, owner's compensation, zero, the computer system red flags that. So again, hopefully this is really helpful. This year, I want to try to go back and remake with a little more detail, a little more color, or just, if nothing else, just hear it again fresh at the top of the Spotify list on why it's helpful to do these different strategies. Obviously, this week we went into the S corp. Any questions, DM me, guys, email me. All the links are in the show notes to get a hold of me or schedule a free discovery call, see if we can help you with our tax advisory system. Have a great week. Thank you for joining us this week on Build Your Wealth Muscle. The links mentioned in this episode are available in the show notes. For video clips and more information on tax and retirement strategies for fitness entrepreneurs, please follow my Instagram at ThePatDarby. If you found value in this episode, please do us a favor and share with a friend. If you tag me, that'd be appreciated also. Lastly, for help implementing any of the topics discussed, please book a call. The link is also in the show notes. Thank you again for listening, and have a great day.